This is Howard Pyle recording cut number 6 in the current series of broadcasts for KTAR Phoenix. I have now spent a sufficient amount of time in the Philippines to be able to give you a fairly accurate picture of exactly what strikes the observer's eye in this rather chaotic post-occupational period. As mentioned before, Manila is about as completely wrecked as your wildest stretch of imagination could conceive. As Fred McPherson's reviews of this area have probably told you, there was a time when the city of Manila fully deserved the title Pearl of the Orient. Its 400,000 citizens had developed a center of trade and industry that must have been a real tribute to the patient toiling that still characterizes the attitude of the natives. In these pre-Japanese days, Manila was one of the most densely built-up cities in the world. There was hardly a square foot of ground that didn't accommodate some sort of a place of business or dwelling. Beautiful homes lined the city's better streets for miles and miles. They were not single-story and different types of dwellings, but elaborate two- and three-story houses with many of the most modern features known to home construction. Steel window sash, tiled baths and roofs, built-in features that would be a credit to even the most pretentious of our stateside homes. The city's apartment houses were extensive, each of them representing a certain palatial comfort that was essential to Manila's brightest days. The hotels were positively regal in many of their appointments. For the sports-minded, the city had provided the great Rizal Stadium, unquestionably one of the largest and most completely equipped sports plants to be found anywhere in the world. The theaters must have been models in design and facilities. The governmental buildings gave the center of the city something solidly beautiful in the finest kind of concrete and steel construction. The downtown business district, though perhaps a little more congested than would be our preference in the States, was a bustling parade of well-stocked stores of every description. Manila was indeed the most occidental metropolis in the Orient. Today, Manila is a tragic reminder of the waste of war. Whole blocks of the city's residential district are vacant, overgrown with weeds, and cluttered with debris. Wooden structures once covered these areas, and the result is that they were left absolutely vacant by the fires that emptied those lots. The beautiful homes of steel and concrete are hollow-eyed hulks of glassless windows and blistered walls. They look like skeletons as they stand out against the sky, empty of everything but the memories of having once been the pride of the streets they made famous. Where a few of the better homes still stand in a reasonable state of preservation, the window panes show the clean round holes made by the bullets of various types of small arms. The walls are chipped and splintered with gunfire. The yards are jungles of undergrowth. All about there is an air of desolation, a forsaken look that leaves you depressed as you wonder what happened to the happy families that once made these comfortable dwellings rendezvous of happiness and contentment. The great apartment houses are cracked ruins from one end of the city to the other. The hotels have been gutted of everything but their steel-reinforced walls. Inside, the elaborate furnishings have been burned to a crisp and now lay in grotesque piles, a melted jumble of loose ends. The tremendous Rizal Stadium looks as though a pitched battle had been played as a spectacular game with no regard whatsoever for the devastation that goes with wild uses of explosives. It's a shell of its former self, capable of holding thousands of sports-loving fans. Most terrible of all is the remains of the costly public buildings. Their concrete and steel immensity is so battered and split apart that rebuilding will be absolutely impossible. The Japs retired to them as fortresses during the siege of Manila. The only way to rout them was to tear the buildings down, stone for stone, room for room, with the heaviest artillery that could be brought to bear on them. The wreckage is complete. Only the city hall remains tenable. The remainder of the circle will have to be cut apart with torches, broken into small chunks with dynamite, and carted away as a total loss. The theaters are a tragic comedy in real life. Their once elaborate marquees no longer gleam with the brilliance of a nightlife that must have been a thrill to the thousands who thronged these centers of entertainment. Instead, what is left mocks the hour when men forsake pleasant diversions for the hellish insanity of self-destruction. The downtown business district is a pauperized travesty. Blackened walls show the marks of fires that wiped out blocks of buildings, at the same time robbing them of goods that could today be the salvation of Philippine trade. Most of the stores have been left as the Japanese left them. The attempt to open them for business at this stage of the game is futile, for there is nothing to put in them. Here and there, merchants have walls that have so secluded little corners where they have now assembled the remnants of what little there is left. Slowly, and the pace is agonizing, the businessmen of Manila are casting about for the wherewithal to revive some semblance of the business that once made this great city the hub of Philippine trade. Prices have reached a point that makes buying prohibitive. The rate of exchange between the American dollar and the Filipino peso is 2-1. It would be unfair to offer a snap appraisal of the exact ratio of inflation, but it's sufficient to make normal trade almost unthinkable. Scarcity is the answer. A scarcity made many times more severe by the vastly increased needs of the destitute thousands who have returned to Manila in the vague hope of resurrecting some sort of a future out of the heartbreaking ruins that show the crushed state of things. Heavy traffic, no maintenance, and a variety of other difficulties have left the roads and streets of the city in a terrible state. The bridges across the Pasig River, originally equal to all the traffic the streets could carry, are today the best the Army can provide in the emergency, but still far from equal to the burden that makes them a perpetual bottleneck in the flow of activity from one side of the city to the other. Through this vast tumble of ravaged rubble, the people of Manila are threading their uncertain way. The poor are everywhere because today everyone in Manila is poor. Bare feet are common. Virtually the only shoes available are the awkward wooden clogs that only the most practiced can use to advantage. Like so many ants, the men, women, and children are wandering the city in search of anything and everything that can be salvaged, either for sale to the dealers in odds and ends or as a means of assisting in the rebuilding of the most humble kind of shelters. Corrugated iron litters almost every block. Though rusted and misshapen, the natives are beating into usable lengths and widths as much of it as possible and carrying it from one part of the city to another. Considering the small stature of the native, his light bone and muscle, you wonder where he finds the physical strength to handle the great loads that he carries on the top of his head, his shoulders, and on the ends of poles balanced across the back. They go in a trot, the gait apparently being helpful in holding their burdens on a fairly even balance. They pay no attention to anything along the way. Eyes straight ahead, they amble on to goodness knows where. Rain or shine, their labors continue. How their frail bodies stand up under the beating they receive is a constant mystery. If this is the heart of the Philippines, then no amount of privation will long confine these islands. Under the most trying conditions, they are doing their best to clean up the wreckage. Watching them pick at the endless pile that is Manila today leaves you amazed at their courage. They have no machinery except that of the Army engineers, and most of that equipment is largely essential to the actual needs of the armed services in this vicinity. A few little carts, some horse-drawn, but most of them pushed by hand, represent the limit of the mechanical means available to them. Transportation here makes the situation at home seem almost perfect. I have seen as high as 15 persons riding on the converted delivery-type body with which many of the bantam cars of the area have been equipped. These bantam cars are not 1 ounce bigger than the Austins that briefly held the public's fancy in the States. Most of the cars once owned by the natives may now be seen scattered along the streets and the roadways, burned beyond recognition and so full of bullet holes that there's hardly a square foot of their bodies that isn't perforated. Tires and gasoline for the few native motor vehicles are so scarce that their operation has become virtually impossible. The little children have suffered probably more than anyone else. The alleyways are full of them, and always they are grubbing through the ruins for anything they can find that might relieve their hunger or bring them a spare centavo or two. Their clothes are in tatters. Their bodies show all the effects of undernourishment. Their eyes are the dull eyes of boys and girls whose senses have been so numbed by the absence of even the bare necessities of life as to be almost beyond revival. How happy they would be with just the cast-off from the wardrobes of America's children, the scraps from even the most modest tables. The things they improvise into playthings would be scorned as junk by many a boy and girl I know, in fact, all of them whom I know. Still, these native children are glad to have the least of their possessions. They smile, too, even laugh at times, in spite of the misery of their circumstances. Imagine the distress of the mothers and fathers who are powerless to give their little ones anything but the worst of it. Fortunately, the most of the suffering and want is in the cities, such as Manila. The country hereabouts is richly productive, and those natives who have been wise enough to make the most of this fact are at least getting enough to eat. Their lives are hard, too, but hardship is robbed of much of its sharper pang when there is food and shelter. After visiting this war-torn area, Senator Millard Tidings returned to Washington with the intention of asking the United States government for an outright gift of $100 million toward the rebuilding of the Philippine Commonwealth. This gives you some idea of what Japanese aggression has left behind, what militarism leaves in its quaking wake. As time permits, I hope to give you other sketches of things as I see them in these distant places. My first mission, of course, is to locate as many of our boys as possible, but as this diminishes in possibility, we'll devote more and more time to conditions, prospects, and situations out here in the Pacific. And now back to Fred for a roundup of the spot news from this theater.